Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage of Augmented World Expo 2026, I'm digging into some of the different sections of things that are giving hope in terms of the open and interoperable vision of the future of technology. And so today's interview is with Ben Irwin, who is the Immersive Academy of Arts and Sciences, but also has been working more broadly on things that, you know, the predecessors of the Poly Awards, WebXR Awards, the Metatraversal Forum, which led to the Metaverse Standards Forum. And so he's really thinking deeply around coming from this background of web development, which is really based upon these open standards and the importance of these interoperable open standards in order to like facilitate a different type of technology that's completely democratized, that allows everybody to participate in some fashion. And so coming from this web background, he's been very interested in trying to create that same culture from that web development community into the XR community, which is kind of biased towards Unity, Unreal Engine, all these kind of proprietary ways where things aren't really like shared in any substantial fashion. But there's a lot of really interesting things that are moving forward with all the different tech stack of the open standards that are required to create these immersive experiences. I'll be diving deep into all of that with Neil Trevitt here in a couple episodes. But one of the things that Ben is really excited about is GLTF version 2.1, which is embedding all these different aspects of streaming of resources, which has got this geospatial context where you have these huge like terabyte size data sets that you're able to kind of chunk down and deliver it as you need it. But also that has lots of different implications for having lots of different assets that you have in different worlds that you might be able to deliver more in a real-time fashion rather than expecting people to download these huge file sizes. So it's kind of gearing up to create these amazing immersive experiences that don't require you to, like, to sit there for an hour downloading it, but can jump in and more dynamically have these things loading up on the fly. And so Ben's also looking at this question of public media. What's it mean to have public media with XR, and trying to find all these analogs from previous iterations of communication laws, but thinking about like what's it mean to create the public good, kind of like the Wikipedia of XR is one of the things that he's really thinking about. So lots of really deep discussions around like how do you create a sort of public commons around XR, which I think is really linked to Mariana Mazzucato's recent work called The Common Good Economy, which released in the UK on June 4th. 2026, and it's coming out here in September. I've been trying to get a hold of a copy of it to be able to read through it and to see it, but it's based here in the United States, so it's a little bit more difficult to get a hold of it so far. But I'm hoping to get a copy of it and to read through it, because I think that Mariana Mazzucato, in my interview that I did with Joseph Pine about the transformation economy, I dig into a lot of her work where she's really thinking about these concepts of the public good, the commons. And so a lot of her work is seeing how the larger state can start to really facilitate these visions of what's it mean to actually facilitate the common good. And so I feel like Mariana Mazzucato's economics works is really the philosophical basis that has a lot of these different countries around the world that are really kind of leaning into this kind of mission-oriented funding. The CCCC in the Netherlands with the Creative Immersive Impact Industries Coalition is one example of that, which is they're giving like 200 million euros to be able to do lots of different things, including like funding artists to collaborate with scholars to figure out how to use XR and immersive technologies to be able to revitalize aspects of civic society. So there's really exciting things that are happening in that front. But yeah, just this idea of the open source, the commons, and open standards interoperability is a lot of different things that Ben is thinking quite deeply about. So we'll be covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Ben happened on Thursday, June 18th, 2026, at the Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, Kent. I'm Ben Irwin, and I'm the president of the Academy of Immersive Arts and Sciences and the creator of the Polys. And the Academy has several programs that have been around for a few years called Metatraversal and Ready Player Golf.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into this space.
Well, I came out of the web. I worked for 20 years as a developer. And as web development itself was becoming commoditized, that was when XR started coming in. And I saw that was what was next and wasn't quite sure where I was going to land in this. But I did a lot of research and I studied up on all the major aspects of XR, virtual production, volumetric video. And what I was waiting for was the web to come in. So when WebXR appeared, I was there in the moment. And during COVID in 2020, I started working with Julie Smithson and Terry Schussler, and we created the XR Collaboration Project. And during that year, I got very obsessed with the new amazing WebXR experiences that came out. And that inspired me to create the Polys, the WebXR Awards, later that year. And a lot of things sort of came out of that. At the same time, Sophia Mashasha and I had done Ready Player Golf, and I invited Julie to host the Polys, and I invited Sophia to host the red carpet of the Polys. And they wound up founding XR Women with Karen Alexander, and the Polys led to the WebXR Developer Summit, which begat other WebXR summits, including the Design Summit that you hosted in October of 2021. And that led us to Metatraversal. And that was where we started a standards and advocacy event series for industry leaders to talk about standards and interoperability in the open metaverse, which led to the creation of Metaverse Standards Forum, which ultimately led to the founding of the Academy with Karen and Terry. So there's a lot of tangled webs we weave in this story, but that's about as short as I can make it.
It's an unfolding process and evolution through all these different iterations. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more context to, you know, there was the WebXR Awards and Polys. How did that lead to what it is now? Because it was very much focused on what was happening on the web, but I think the scope of what you were trying to do with it expanded. And so just curious to hear a little bit more around the catalyst from that evolution.
Well, all along, we wanted to celebrate WebXR, but knowing that a lot of great content were in native apps. And for one thing, it's more difficult to have a level playing field of judging for native apps. And we weren't really quite sure what we wanted to call it. We didn't want to call it the Metaverse Awards and follow the hype of 2021. So it was the WebXR Awards for the first 4 years. And all along, we did want to change the WebXR name, and it became the Immersive Awards in Polys 5 and Polys 6. And now Polys 7 will be next May 21st.
Okay. And so maybe just give a bit more context as to the intention for what you're trying to achieve with the Polys and the Academy for Immersive Arts and Sciences.
Well, they're really two separate questions. So first of all, I think that the Academy's ethos is educate, inspire, and recognize. And this aligns the mission of the Polys, because what we've been doing is recognizing people all along. And so that is how we want to grow the Polys, by continuing to recognize more people. And ultimately, we want this to be the Oscars of immersive. It's the only standalone show that we've done. But we created the Academy for a different reason.
Okay. What was the reason?
Well, I really feel that we need public media in XR. We don't have non-commercial, educational, arts, culture, history, science, and distribution is fragmented. Standards have been fragmented. I think that we're at a interesting moment. I mean, I don't know if I would call it an inflection point, but it is certainly coinciding with the metaverse, as it were, bottoming out in terms of all of the previous social XR platforms that were walled gardens. Most of them have died off. And the ones that have prevailed, like Engage, for example, is one of the more interoperable ones. Now, VRChat is one of the more popular and successful ones, but I don't think we saw it coming how many of them would perish this year. And so now we're in a situation where it's a great time for a restart, but last year we saw the Corporation for Public Broadcasting get closed after the Congressional Rescission Act took away over $1 billion in funding. So the CPB had been formed in 1967, led to the creation of PBS, and was responsible for distributing the funding from Congress to PBS and NPR. And when they took that away, PBS and NPR still exist, but through, you know, foundation support, viewers like you, but the governmental funding is there. And then when you take it and you transpose it to the rest of the world, most of the public media enterprises out there are national public media, and they're either funded by taxpayers or they're funded by governments or a combination of that. And of course, they do take on philanthropic funding, but I think that for a global network, we need to have a solely philanthropically funded event and not make it a national enterprise.
Well, I know that in the past, I've had some previous conversations and learned that the cable access stations that are around the United States in different regional locations were mandated by one of the communications acts or something around the, it was basically like if the FCC is going to give a license to the television companies that are broadcasting, then they have some obligation to contribute back and to create a resource to democratize access to broadcasting technology. So to have cable access stations to allow people to have some airtime on these channels. But in the advent of the internet and social media and XR, there's no equivalent mandate from the government to create these resources that would make these technologies and immersive technologies available. And also the distribution chains have been captured by private corporations in a way that there isn't like any public airwaves in the same analog. And so just curious to hear how you start to think about this and what is a potential future path that would be trying to achieve the same type of impulse of trying to make more accessible these technologies to the general public.
Well, I've looked into this a lot, and the public access story is very important, and that was done by Congress, as was C-SPAN. And C-SPAN is still going and still delivering live congressional hearings and public interest content because it was baked into the rules when cable and satellite was originally regulated. C-SPAN stands for Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network, and it's still going. Now, when we moved into the internet era, what made it different was that we have permissionless publishing at the protocol level. And so that was an advent of freedom that we didn't have before. And then Jimmy Wales came along and he created Wikipedia. And that's as close as we can get to a public commons on the web. And things like archive.org, for example, were a public commons that was also built for the early web. But the thing that's great about that part of the story is that because of the openness of the web, people were able to do that and to build something out of it. And when they saw, okay, that's a great idea, let's have a encyclopedia that everybody could edit, that may or may not have worked out as an experiment. But here it is, you know, 25, 30 years later, and that's still going strong. And so one of the projects that we actually have for what we're trying to build at the Academy is Wiki3dia. And we'd like it to complement Wikipedia and all of the other open distribution platforms so that there are accessible and free access to encyclopedic knowledge, but in 3D and fully immersive experiences that people can, you know, it's a real opportunity to redefine free public education opportunity. But to your point, social media and the streaming era did not give us a commons. And sure, we can get PBS on streaming for $10 a month. And, you know, their premium content is gated because that's how premium works and how streaming works. But PBS is not the commons that it was when it was analog broadcast over the air. So I think that it's essential that we understand that the structures that were built for analog terrestrial broadcast and the affiliate stations and the way that those networks work can be adapted, but they don't map onto the world as it is today. And it's essential that we build a public commons now before the industry hardens. Like once all these devices go mass market, we need to fill the pipeline with public content, non-commercial things that parents can feel good about showing to their kids. And if you look at the legacy of what PBS has done for the American people and you transpose that to BBC, transpose that to NHK in Japan, all over the world, different countries have different implementations and manifestations of public media. But we don't need borders in the metaverse anymore. We're embodied and we can share an experience. And I think that that's really essential that it be built for the new era.
Yeah, as I think about the XR industry, so much investment and time and energy has been put into games because games has a market, and there's all sorts of other sectors and industry verticals like education, which isn't nearly as profitable. It's basically contributing back to the public good. And so something like Wikipedia is trying to capture some of that cultural knowledge, and it's co-created and amazingly found a way to have this very radically open approach for taking input. And it's certainly not perfect. There's lots of things that are wrong with Wikipedia. However, it's kind of like the best of anything else that's out there in terms of trying to achieve that vision of the commons. And so for XR, I think of something like Ready Player One, the aspects of Ready Player One, not the gamification aspects, but more of how in that story there's like so much education that's available that is completely immersive. And, you know, as I look about that now, it's like, okay, who paid for that? Where'd that come from? And I feel like there's a bit of similar vision of what I see in Ready Player One for what you're talking about. But I'm just curious from your perspective, what does the public commons in XR and immersive media look like? What type of experiences would one be able to have if we were to kind of achieve the equivalent of Wikipedia or something like some of the science fiction depictions in Ready Player One relative to the education aspects?
I mean, I think the Ready Player One example is largely dystopian in terms of the way that that's set up. And it really doesn't need to be like that. But I think that if we focus on the positive things about it, like in particular, I think that one of my personal favorite things about social XR is that we can be anywhere. So like, when we did Mission Responsible last year, I was in Japan and there were people in every continent last year doing a live show. And we were all there together sharing one space. And so what does it look like? Well, you know, first of all, immersive brings all of the assets that were there before. So text and images and video and sounds and live data can all be brought in to an immersive experience and it can decorate it. And what we see a lot is, I just call it 2D and 3D, where it's just because of optimization, you know, we're still early in the ability to render 3D in an optimal way. That's why standalone headsets are very limited. But we're going to be crossing a threshold soon where the new normal is going to be fully 3D enabled devices that are light, affordable, and it will hit the mass market. So the choice that we have is, are we going to build content and experiences that people can inhabit together from anywhere in the world and focus on things to learn? There's so much potential ideation that could go on about that. And that is probably the most exciting thing about it is, you know, I've got my own little sliver of the answer to that. But when you apply all the genius of all the people in the industry and the creators who haven't discovered immersive content creation yet, then it's going to unlock something humanity hadn't had before and just continue to sort of build on what previous media types have evolved society. But it's essential that we create a safe and nutritious environment, if you will, nourishing materials for minds of all ages to consume so that it's not, you know, as far as journalism is concerned, that we're not living in an age of disinformation. That's, you know, one of the fears and one of the reasons why PBS got defunded is for its objectivity. And that's a real problem that we need to overcome. But this moment is an opportunity for us to hit the reset button. And that's what I'm campaigning for.
Yeah, it feels like we're at this crossroads, as Ori said in his keynote, but also this kind of liminal state where there are some choices where if we go back to like 1989, beginning of the internet, it's like sort of the quintessential example of open standards that are proliferating this kind of liberatory and emancipatory experience of technology, of democratizing the access to be able to publish. Like you said, there's no constraints to getting things on the internet aside from, you know, cost for owning your own server and to potentially like have the technological knowledge to do it. But for the most part, relative to the past, it's a lot more democratized than it has been. And then 2007, you have Android and iOS that are coming online around that time. And social media in the sense that it's the beginning of these walled gardens that are starting. And then with XR, you have a number of things that are coming up and they were mostly walled gardens. And now that they're gone, of like the rec room of a decade of virtual cultural heritage is now completely gone. And so from an internet archivist perspective, they are already trying to archive the virtual culture that's happening on 2D web, but there isn't like an equivalent preservation or trying to capture and save this very ephemeral, more virtually mediated content. And so just curious to hear some of your reflections of what does the open standards provide? Because we're at this crossroads of, are we going to continue to go down these paths of these walled gardens where we don't have agency or control over what happens to the content? And if those companies decide to turn off a switch, then all that content is suddenly gone. versus something that's a little bit more open and interoperable and the open standards, which I think is a lot of what your work has been coming from the world of the web, where that was such a foundational principle of having these different types of interoperable standards. So just curious to hear a little bit more reflection on this moment and this choice point that we have.
There are a lot of places that I could take that. So first of all, when you talk about the rise of iOS and Android, you talk about the rise of the App Store. You know, that was something that we didn't have before. So number one, that controls distribution. It gates distribution. It has terms of service that you cannot have anybody make payments that are not part of that app ecosystem. And so that is very limiting and potentially harmful. You know, I was rooting for Unreal Engine when they had their lawsuit with Apple a couple of years ago because, you know, they were taking on the App Store monopoly. So that's one aspect of it, is the lock-in distribution. And I'll also say that a lot of these app stores do not want you to have distribution apps, like unless you're a studio, that it's against the terms of service to do this. And, you know, like DOVR is a great platform, but they're actually grandfathered in. But if you tried to start one of those today, and I think that that's like the makings of a class action lawsuit at some point, and I honestly hope it happens, because we should be able to add apps to the platform. You know, whether, however things land with the commission that an app store takes, you know, that's not my decision there. But I think that the way things are that we accept really should be challenged, because the market did not build us a public commons with this. So also, when you talk about Facebook and Instagram and all of the major social networks, you know, and I just named two that are owned by Meta, and Meta does what they do really well, but those are walled gardens in and of themselves. Those are not a commons. You know, you don't own the data. They pay lip service to you being able to export it, but, you know, all of that content. But a couple of months ago, my wife had her account completely deactivated by Facebook. Just woke up one morning and it was gone after 15 years, disconnecting her from all of these people. And that was distressing. But what was also distressing was the lack of recourse, the ability to approach that. And so when you vest your identity in something for 15 years, and all of a sudden one morning that's gone, it's very emotionally impactful. And so she got her account back later in the week, and we'll never know whether our appeal worked or because we have friends in high places that got it done. But she now has access to her account, including her business accounts that are appended to it, but it'll never be the same again. And I think it's where I'm going with this is that we still haven't really worked out identity. And, you know, we have email and password, which is sort of web one. And then we have federated SSO identities, which is web two. And then, you know, we'll see how blockchain wallets turn out to be. You know, ultimately, they're just another password scheme.
There's the AT Proto, I'd give a shout out, because they have ways of having your own website. And that could be a functional identity. But again, that sort of requires you to own your own website. But that's at least one promising one that I see.
But identity is a central conversation that we need to be solving right now, because you want that authenticity and legitimacy when you're sharing a space with somebody. But we've gone very far down the road of having this Faustian bargain of giving up our data for free content. And that's going to continue, but it really has to come down to transparency, like what happens to our data, who owns it. We have no ability to know where it is, what it says about us, what the algorithm is determining based on the information it has. And ultimately, it doesn't give us a cut of the money that it's making off of it. And so all that's sort of corrupt. And we need to think about how we can build this next thing. And so the commons isn't necessarily going to be free, but it should be freely accessible, especially to underprivileged folks, because one of the other things that's really critical is access. And there are so many out there who still don't even have proper access to the internet. And we are very much living in a haves and have-nots. But it's the disparity between that is going to be that much more stark if we continue into a future where we all have a different level of access to this common space.
Yeah. And so I'm curious to hear some of your reflections of the landscape of standards and what's getting you excited right now.
And I kind of took that away from standards. well, particularly GLTF 2.1, the release of this is an advent, because now for years, people have been writing hacks to chunk down small pieces of things so that large download payloads can be consumable by a device. You know, it's typically 10 to 100 megabytes is normal that you would download for a native app type of experience. But if the content inside of that, you know, geospatial in particular is where this comes out of. And it's a very interesting story that Patrick Cozy from Cesium, he founded Cesium. He also stewarded GLTF as a spec. And then as Cesium needed to have 3D tiles to be able to download massive data sets of 3D world information on demand, only what you needed, he came up with 3D tiles, and he gave 3D tiles to the OGC, and the OGC then standardized that. And now he's given that back to the Kronos Group, which is then releasing it as a standard. So people don't need to hack GLTF anymore. And that is going to allow for transmission of large data sets that are relative to the person that's using them. And at the end of the day, that's going to be a savings for the internet over what people are going to get the bang for the bite, if you will. When you have video, interesting stat, video takes up 80% of the internet as we know it. And Netflix has edge networks in 175 countries. So the footprint of streaming is absolutely massive. And this is just a growth of the last 15 years. And immersive will actually run on less than that. You know, maybe stereo video will have a higher payload, but downloading models and sipping avatar positioning is a very low bandwidth proposition. So groups of people, but also like on the standards front, besides what GLTF is doing with streaming, I think that WebGPU and WASM are very important with WebXR to be able to bring higher fidelity experiences, because I think one of the big limiters of this is people are kind of nonplussed by cartoon avatars at the end of the day, and people don't want to do tethered PCVR or make the investment in the hardware that will do it. And so these are things that have never caught on, but that's going to change. The form factor is going to change. The price point's going to change. And we've seen it happen throughout history over and over again. Like the idea of, like when you used to have a big bulky VHS player to be able to watch an analog movie on, and now you can just have it stored on your phone. Like things inevitably shrink, and that's what's going to happen with these devices.
Is there anything else that you're tracking that you'd like to dig into?
What am I tracking? Well, I am tracking what the public media landscape is across the world and where investments being made in education and arts and culture. I think that in particular, the hot topic right now is cultural preservation. And I had an interesting experience last year where this fellow named Pete Kelsey, who is a reality capture specialist, he captured Alcatraz down to 6 millimeter accuracy. And I found that so incredibly inspiring that he had this hyper accurate, is more than a digital twin. That's a incredible data set that preserved a national park. And I thought, wow, that's pretty incredible. And then my wife and I had the privilege of going to Angkor Wat in Cambodia about a month later. And this is a sprawling network of temples over like 200 square kilometers in Cambodia that have been eroding and dilapidating for over 1,000 years. And so much so that, you know, war and climate change visited upon these places, that the erosion and the damage to the temples is quite significant. And it just really inspired me that you have these local tour guides who spend their careers telling the stories of a place with authenticity. You have the need for local people to be doing 3D, learning 3D for devices and broadcast media to come. That wouldn't it be amazing to actually do these hyper-accurate reality captures to make experiences that can also take you back in time, like, you know, let the people reimagine what their own temple looked like. And, you know, there's a lot of sensitivity around culture, obviously, but the opportunity there is to let authentic people make their creations upon these accurate scans. So one of the flagship programs that I'm proposing for the Academy is called Time Nexus. And it combines these elements of reality capture and then teaching local people and capturing local things. And, you know, it's a big, very expensive vision, but I think it's one that's worthy of philanthropy to invest in at scale to be able to track the world. Because, you know, look, we just had a world leader say that I'm going to destroy an entire civilization. And, you know, whether or not that was a completely empty threat, this is the world we're living in right now. And we need to be mindful that these treasures of human civilization can just be gone. But now we have this amazing opportunity to capture them in 3D and let the people of the future inhabit them, even if they are gone.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of all these immersive technologies might be and what they might be able to enable?
The ultimate potential, I would like to, you know, idealistically say that we can spread more human understanding and sort of lower the temperature of what is going on in the world. You know, we're at another sort of, you know, we're at an ebb with the VR industry, but we're at a flow with madness going on in the world. And I think that people understanding each other better across borders could be a catalyst for positive global change. And that's, to me, the what would be the ultimate outcome that I would like to say, hence, you know, whenever it's in the past, that's what happened. But that's something to strive for.
Is anything else left unsaid you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Keep the faith, because one of the things that I've been observing is that there's been a lot of lack of consistency. And, you know, people who sort of come and go and they're chasing a quick buck, and they're, you know, if you work in a hype driven mindset, you know, and they're all a lot of squirrels to get distracted by, but that this technology is going to be transformative, and find your place in that, you know, whatever inspires you to do some good in the world, then, you know, that will help bring about my previous answer.
Nice. Well, Ben, thanks so much for sitting down with me. I myself come from a web background, a part of my career. So I've always been appreciative of the power of open standards and what that can do to create this technology that works for everybody, not just for a handful of tech trillionaires now, both companies and individuals. And so we're kind of really in this battle between the consolidation of wealth and power on that walled gardens versus how can we start to open it up in a way that puts the power back in the hands of people, because it's the hyperscalers have proven that their approach doesn't necessarily work in the way that they had imagined. And so it's kind of be left up to these small businesses and individuals to be able to kind of create these sustainable aspects of the industry that can survive and persist, but also hopefully create technologies that are more interoperable and based upon these open standards. So yeah, thanks again for joining me.
And the Metaverse Standards Forum, of course, you know, I would like to give a shout out. It's free to become a participating member, and that gives you a seat as we're developing standards across silos. And I think it's really important to understand, get the lay of the land, what's going on. And if you're building something, you want to know what standards are being implemented in there so that your content that you're building with it will be durable.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Right. Cheers. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.